First Palm Media. You are listening to Mushing on First Palm Media. Visit our website at mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You are listening to Mushing, and I am joined today by Will Rhodes. He is calling in from Two Rivers, Alaska. He is a recent Iditarod finisher. He came in 22nd place in 10 days, 22 hours, 42 minutes, and 2 seconds. Will, how's it going today?
Hey, Robert. It's going pretty well.
But I don't think you and I have ever spent any time together just chatting about mushing, so it is a pleasure.
Yeah, right on. Yep. Met you in passing a couple times. So
for sure. So let's start this off, Will. Can you tell our audience a little bit about who you are and what you're all about, please?
Sure. I'm a dog musher. I've been, you know, breeding, raising, training, and racing dogs out of Two Rivers, Alaska we moved out here in 2012, started breeding dogs in 2011 with my wife, Brenda, and the goal was to have a competitive racing kennel. And for the last 10 years or so, we've engaged in primarily mid-distance events. We like to go fast enjoy the format. It's also, you know, amenable to my professional work schedule. I also work as an environmental consultant, managing environmental remediation projects on the side. So I do that when I'm not, you know, in the dog lot, on the trail, and racing dogs.
So I was reading your bio on Iditarod.com, and it says that you met Brenda on the ice field. So I assume you guys were working in the tour operation. Is that how you got started in the sport?
Kind of. Previous to that, it was 1998. I was kind of spinning my wheels after high school. I dropped out of first year of college and told my parents I wanted to kind of get out of Northern California, where I was born and raised. And I had an uncle in Haines, Alaska. And anyway, got a hold of him and he said, yeah, I can set you up with some summer work. And the summer waned and a guy was actually building a timber frame home for needed a dog handler for the Yukon Quest, which he was preparing to run in 1998. His name is Dan Turner, and he is, you know, now the owner of Alaska Icefield Expeditions. At any rate, I helped Dan train his dogs alongside the late Joe May in the Southern Yukon Territory in the winter of, you know, 97-98. And that was my introduction to sled dogs, the north. That was the first winter I had spent, you know, in a snowy region. I grew up on the coast in Northern California. So at any rate, that I was running dogs there with Joe May and Dan Turner. Incidentally, you know, Brenda was training a dog team with her dad in Nenana, Alaska. Her dad was racing in the Quest that year with the veteran race team, and Brenda was running yearlings, and that was going to be her opportunity to run the Quest in 98. So we were actually both involved in the 98 Quest. Brenda ran it and finished it, and I handled for Dan Turner. And then it was 2 years later, Dan acquired the Alaska Icefield Expeditions sled dog tour business there out of Juneau and invited Brenda to be a musher there. And, you know, with my ties and connection to Dan, he asked me to come up to the glacier as well and work as a musher there for the summer doing tours. And that's where I met Brenda.
And as they say, the rest is history, I'm sure. You guys have been together for a long time, and you guys have one heck of a kennel there. Of course, everybody knows the Mackie name. When you mention that name in the mushing world, you know, people know exactly what's happening. But with that in mind, you guys have one heck of a pedigree behind yourselves. As you mentioned, you've focused a lot on mid-distance racing over the years. You guys do very well. I followed you guys for years and, you know, the local races and whatnot. And if you're not right at there at the top, you're pretty dang close. What was the decision behind that? Since you kind of got your start handling and or training for longer distance like the Quest, what got your start with what changed gears, if you will, to stay on that mid-distance track?
You know, I guess it's not necessarily changing gears. I mean, really, you know, training and racing middle distance isn't so different from long distance. I mean, we're all training dogs to do, you know, 50 to 80 to 100 mile runs, whether you're running a mid-distance event or a long distance event. I think when we started out, Brenda and I, in 2011 with our kennel, naturally just kind of eased in to the middle distance events, you know, with our young dog team. I mean, we started out with, you know, a two-year-old leader and a bunch of yearlings. In the first year, we raced and we did middle distance with them and enjoyed it and just kind of continued on with you know, those events over the years. Didn't really ever become like a focus or an obsession to go run the Quest or the Iditarod. And it just kind of worked out, you know, for our lifestyle and our kennel and, you know, raising our daughter Isabel throughout those years. And she was involved. This is kind of the style that we kind of gravitated toward, you know.
My next question, Will, is with these mid-distance races, and for folks that are listening that may not be familiar, we're talking like the Copper Basin and the Willow 300 and those sorts of races that are very popular up here in Alaska. I guess the question is how do you choose between the two of you on who runs what race? Do you guys sit down in October and say, okay, Brenda, you take this one, I'll take that one, or is there a little bit more to it?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a straightforward recipe. Desire to do a given race or another. Brenda really likes the Kinnick 200. You know, she's wanted to run in that event maybe a little more than me. I wanted to do the Copper Basin years ago, and Brenda didn't really have much of a desire to do it back then. So I was like, all right, well, you know, you can go ahead and run the Copper this year and that's fine. I don't know. We don't really have a recipe, for, you know, who exactly chooses, you know, which race to do. It's kind of just race to race and year to year and how we're feeling.
So up to that point, so when we are talking about fall training leading into the events that you guys are going to do in the winter months, when does training start for you guys? Or is it pretty much as soon as it's cool enough to get out there with the dogs, you guys are ready to rock and roll?
Well, in some years we've started as early as mid-August and find that's really not necessary. You know, some folks in our neighborhood that are competitive start in mid-September to early October. But we just kind of get antsy usually by September 1st. We're really ready to start fall training. And indeed, yes, it's when temps are cool enough at 5 a.m. to get out and start doing those short runs on the ATV.
And you guys really live in that hotbed of mushing up there in Two Rivers. Can you describe to our listeners what it's like up there? What kind of trails do you guys have? You had mentioned doing those longer runs, 50 to 80 miles or so. Is that doable from your house, or do you have to truck the dogs or what?
Oh, no. We have a fantastic trail system out our front door. You know, obviously, as the winter progresses and, you know, ice develops on lakes and rivers, really the access becomes unlimited. If you want to put in a trail, you know, from our house down onto the Chena River and onto the Tanana. I mean, you can run to Nenana or wherever. And obviously once the Quest trail is in February, you know, you can head beyond the Chena Hot Springs up the Skeese Highway. But from our house, you know, we can easily do 100-mile runs, say a 50, you know, camp somewhere and do another 50 in a different direction and come home, you know. They also, you know, we have the Two Rivers 200 sled dog race locally here, which starts at Chattanooga Lodge and basically makes its way over here to Two Rivers and runs up toward the Hot Springs. But just for example, you know, we've got a 200-mile event that, you know, occurs in the Two Rivers area. So just kind of a glimpse of some of the trail opportunities. And, you know, any given year, half the trails that are kind of available aren't even put in. It's a lot of work to put in, you know, trails and maintain them. So, you know, there are, I guess my point being is tons of trail out the back door, tons of opportunity here for great dog mushing on a vast trail system.
For sure. And Will, you had mentioned that your work schedule is really conducive to your guys' training regimen and what you do. Are you, do you work up on the slope? Is it one of those 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, or is it something different?
No, it's I work for Otna Engineering Services, Otna Native Corporation, Otna Incorporated, and I have a small office in Fairbanks where, you know, scientists and engineers, and I work a 40-hour work week, typically, and I live about, you know, half hour from town, about 20 miles out the Hot Springs Road, so, you know, in this day and age, we can telecommute, and so I will work from home, usually at least 2 days a week, which is really beneficial for, you know, not having to make the drive to town and kind of working on my own schedule. I could work, you know, 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. and cut out and have a, you know, nice stretch in the evening for training dogs. Or I can, you know, start at noon and work till 8 and run dogs in the morning if I need to. So, Otna is a fantastic organization, and I work with really good people that support me and support what I do, and we support one another at our office in Fairbanks, and so that really allows me to find time to, you know, get a reasonable balance between my dog mushing endeavors and my job. So
let's switch gears, Will, over to Iditarod. Up to this point, you've been mushing for quite a while, as you mentioned in the previous conversation there. What took you so long to sign up to run for Iditarod as a rookie this year?
Well, I kind of started having aspirations to run the Iditarod in about 2019 or so. Like I say, we really focused on the mid distance, I'd say ultimately from about 2013-14 for 5 years, and we're really excited about all those races, and I felt like I started wanting a little more at that point. And then of course we had the pandemic, and I decided, you know, I wanted to wait until, you know, that was well behind us. I didn't want to kind of do an abbreviated Iditarod, and I wanted to see all of the trail and actually the checkpoints and the people and the experience that, you know, I had come to, you know, understand what the Iditarod was. And so, you know, it's been a few years, but we've had, you know, issues one way or another, maybe some, you know, family health issues, life challenges, busy work schedules. Anyway, I get to the point where I decided it's kind of now or never, you know, I need to sign up last summer. You know, and also kind of having some of my own body issues. I have a arthritic hip, and it's really in pretty bad shape, and, you know that at some day probably going to be a limitation. So it was time for me to sign up and do it, you know, not getting any younger. So
we are definitely not getting any younger for sure. So Will, you talked about just wanting to enjoy the experience. And as we mentioned, 22nd place this year. So a solid finish there. How do you think it went? Was it that enjoyable experience that you thought it would be?
Yeah, Robert, it was incredible. You know, you ask any Iditarod musher, they have a lot of enjoyable times and incredible highs. And of course, there's some very challenging, difficult, you know, low moments out there too. You know, whether you've got a key dog that gets injured, and you have to drop it, or, you go through a really tough run that's much slower and more challenging than you had any idea that it would be. Overall, I had an incredible experience, and, you know, it seemed like it got better, you know, the farther we went, as we all kind of, we as in myself and my dog team, all, I'm a rookie and they're all rookies, you know, they've never completed a 1,000-mile race. And, so it was a new experience for all of us. And, you know, I wasn't exactly sure how I would respond to it or how my dog team would. And I can tell you that, you know, 5 days in, my goal, I had some simple goals for the race. You know, one overall and overarching goal was to get to Nome, you know, finish the dog race. And in doing so, some of the goals, you know, along the way to get me there, I wanted to see my dog team find a rhythm. You know, and I wanted to see them get accustomed to the continuous, you know, day in, day out schedule. And I wanted to see them eat well. And I you know, wanted to see them become ravenous monsters, ready to eat everything I had for them and rest well and get up ready to roll. And, you know, with the rest that I gave them, they did exactly that. You know, they responded, how, you know, I had anticipated they might respond if, you know, they had enough rest and they were eating well. They looked beautiful at the finish line. Great body scores, and well, you know, we had some very, very fast times up the coast, and they had fun, and they had a real, real positive experience, and, you know, makes it easy for the musher to feel good at that point, you know?
For sure. And that leads to my next question is, what was your favorite experience during this year's race? Was it a particular part of the trail? Was it a checkpoint? Of course, it's obviously going to be the finish, but is there a spot there that really stands out to you?
I mean, you know, there are, is it okay if I just give you a few?
Of course.
Okay, so I really love the stretch between Ophir, Tocotna really, and Ruby. So the wilderness, you know, from Tocotna, Ophir to Cripple to Ruby, incredibly wild stretch of trail, beautiful country. And on the run from Cripple to Cripple to Ruby, the evening was rolling upon us, and it had been pretty cloudy most of the race, overcast, some snow. And to the north, you could see a blue skyline, and you knew we were heading into this, you know, impending cold that, you know, we all saw in the forecast. And cruising along, and I think probably the most spectacular meteor, shooting star that I've ever seen in my life. I know I was tired, but I mean, it was, it went on for probably at least 10 seconds. I don't know. Cruising across the sky in front of me. I looked away, looked back, looked away, looked back. It just kept going and going. I kind of started to wonder if it was a shooting star or not. very cool, you know, kind of feel like only on the Iditarod Trail, something like that. Enjoyed that stretch. And I guess I have to say, I just really enjoyed the coast. I enjoyed leaving Old Woman Cabin, you know, on the run from Caltag to Enoliclete. I stopped in there. I think we had somewhere between 50 and 60 below zero, on heading over to Old Woman Cabin, and took a rest there. And when I left, it just started warming up a bit in the morning, and I got around the corner from Old Woman Mountain and into the wide open, you know, sparse trees, lots of open tundra and mountains and sunshine. And it was all of a sudden kind of felt warm again, relatively warm. And, heading toward the coast, it was just an incredible, exciting, time for myself and my dog team, to be kind of heading on that long gradual downhill into Unalakleet. And, you know, the entire coast, I mean, I felt like, you know, aside from the wind and the cold ambient temperatures and the wind chill, you know, advisories and all that jazz, I mean, it wasn't too bad. But we had snow on the coast. I mean, there was almost no glare ice to speak of. And, you know, that was very enjoyable to have a snow trail all along the coast, and just being on the coast, such a different place to run dogs. I mean, you know, we primarily run dogs in the woods here in Two Rivers. You know, we travel and train in other places that are a little more open, and expansive and, you know, windswept. But I mean, the coast is, you know, that's, you have to sign up for the Iditarod, you know, to go run on the coast. So it was a wonderful experience to run dogs out there and those hills and on the sea ice. And it was amazing. I loved it.
So before we talk about your dogs, one more question about Iditarod. Was there any point out there where there was a literal, oh crap moment? I wasn't prepared for this in one stretch of imagination. Was it the weather? Was it a part of the trail? Was it the dogs? What? Is there just that one moment you can think of like, oh my goodness?
Yeah. Well, there were a lot. There were quite a few there, Robert. You know, I definitely felt like there were a number of things that I would do differently, obviously, next time. And there were plenty of, you know, rookie type moves and even so, I guess one thing that stands out is I had a pretty small sled going into the race, and my solution for my small sled was to get a trailer and pull a trailer behind my sled to have more space to carry gear and such. On the second run of the race from Squintna to Finger Lake, the trail was probably the softest, roughest, kind of slow, tough going, grinded out, hardcore trail, you know, of the race. I guess a lot of people would, you know, the Copper Basin's known for being a soft sugar snow, deep, slow trail. And that's kind of how it was from Squintna to Finger. And that trailer, you know, I had used it in training a bunch, but on, you know, hard, fast trails, for the most part. And I got on that soft, rutted, you know, wind blown. There were lots of big drifts, and that trailer went over multiple times. You know, it flipped over and was dragging behind me. And, I realized at that moment, when I leave Finger Lake, I'm headed toward the Happy River Steps. And if this trailer's going over now, and when the trailer goes over, it can kind of cause the sled to want to kind of go over in that direction as well. And I had no crap moment when I got to Finger Lake, thinking, how am I going to keep all this outfit upright, you know, whipping around those steps and wrapping tight corners and rapid downhills with that trailer behind me. And, you know, I sat there in Finger Lake staring at my configuration, kind of wondering if I should lose the trailer altogether and try to repack everything. I didn't feel like I could at the time. I just had so much of my gear that I kind of needed for down the trail a ways in that trailer. So finally I just said, you know what, you're just going to have to do it, man. You're going to, and if you go over, you go over, and you'll figure it out. And, you know, there are a lot of teams out there with really giant sleds and giant trailers. So I thought, well, you know, people do it. And if other people can do it, I can probably do it too. So That was a bit of an oh crap moment, though. I decided after the experience with the trailer, Ron, I did her out again. It's going to be a larger sled and probably won't carry a trailer behind that sled. So basically have enough, you know, storage capacity on the sled and the tail dragger itself to take everything that I need. And also, I can say that I probably took more gear than I actually really needed this time. And I would pare that down a bit as well in the future. So
And for folks that are listening, that's typically in the mushing community. That's called the rookie bump, as they say, where us us rookies pack way too much stuff. It's like going on that Boy Scout camping trip when you're a kid and you have a 100-pound pack for a weekend in the woods. It's sort of like that, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100%. I had too much stuff. So, so finally, by the time I got to Takotan on my 24, I pared it down, sent the trailer home, and a lot of extra stuff that I decided I could live without, and did just fine. Moving forward, so.
So the trailer made it about a third for folks that are listening. So you thought going in, wow, I think I could do the whole thing with this bad boy, but it made it about 300 miles then, right?
It did, yeah. And I didn't necessarily think I would take it the whole way. I didn't necessarily think I would drop it after, 300 and some odd miles, but the choice became clear, running from Nikolai to McGrath, and I had a bale of straw strapped to the top of it, and going over in the moguls, there's some really bad, snow machine moguls created by the Iron Dog, kind of through the portages on that run. And it was really misery. It did fine through the burn and through the gorge and everything, but, hitting the moguls, not good with the trailer. So,
right. And I bet that was not good for that, that bum hip either. I remember Brenda had posted something on Facebook about that time where she said we try to not talk to each other during races. We try to let each of us run our own, but she said that she was a little worried about you or something, if I recall, and I may be recalling this a little bit different, but she was a little concerned about the old hip or back or whatever.
Yeah. I had a steroid injection 1 week before the race, it felt really good after that for the week leading up to the race. The pain had diminished. I kind of wasn't limping. I'd kind of been limping around most of the winter and hard to sleep at night and stuff. But that injection, I thought, man, thank goodness I finally got this thing. And the idea was to get it right before the race because they can last, for 7 days to 3 months, depending on the person and what you're up to. Well, I got through the burn, through the gorge, through the burn, and got to Nikolai, and that any benefits I had enjoyed from that steroid injection were totally gone. And in fact, I was in more pain than I really had been, in that hip. It's a tough trail, squinting to Nikolai. I mean, it's hard not to take a beating out there on the body, and your sled and your gear, everything. I was hurting at that point, but, the worst of it for me is walking around and kind of bending over and even laying down, like trying to rest. I had a hard time sleeping out there because that's kind of when it hurt the most was when I'd lay down. But so thankfully on the sled itself, driving the sled, never was too bad for me. And thankfully, that's a lot of the time you're spending out there on the Iditarod is on your sled. So it worked out. I knew all along it was not going to be fun and it was going to hurt. But just have to kind of grit your teeth and get through it kind of thing. Because, as I said, I kind of viewed this as right now, hey, this could be my one opportunity to run this race, to complete this race, to make it to Nome. Something that I wanted to do for a long time. And so, I knew it was just something I was going to have to kind of tough out and live with. And it was okay.
Well, yeah. Again, congrats for the finish. Let's switch gears a little bit while we still have a little time left here, Will, and talk about your dogs. Yep. Obviously, that's an important component to this. I don't know if you know this, but I think about half of our kennel is your guys' dogs. We've got several of them that are a little bit older. We've had a litter or two, and I seem to be a little familiar with what you guys are producing out there. And you said you had one heck of a dog team out there. Let's talk about them for a little bit. Before we get into the particulars, how many dogs do you have currently, and how many of them are sort of in that race age compared to puppy, compared to older dogs, et cetera?
Sure. I want to say we have around 40 dogs. This fall, we started training 36. I think we had about 42, maybe. Anyway, 36 dogs. And I want to say 11 of those were yearlings. And a couple of them were like older leaders that, made it into October-ish. Time frame, and then when we started kind of getting into longer miles and longer runs, we scaled back to about 25 dogs that we really spent most of the winter training. 25 dogs. So ultimately, I was running typically a 13 dog team, and Brenda a 12 dog team as soon as we were able to get on sleds. And of those 25 dogs, I think we had, I don't know, how many two-year-olds did we have in that group? 9 two-year-olds of the 25 dogs there. And really trained that group all winter long, and ended up with 2 two-year-old dogs of the 16 I started with in the Iditarod, a few three-year-olds, and a pretty large number of four-year-old dogs, and then couple of older ones, like a couple six-year-olds, seven-year-old, a couple of eight-year-old dogs.
Tell us about one of your favorite dogs. Do you, a lot of people that are listening think it's always the lead dog that is the favorite, and that's usually far from the case. Do you have a favorite dog? And if so, who is that? And do you have a story about them or a story about another one that you'd like to share?
I can be honest and say I don't have a favorite. I have so many that I love so much, and for different reasons and in different ways, and the relationship and experience with each one is unique. But I'd say definitely one of my favorites, one of my all-time favorites, and as a little girl, her name is Lusa. She was a 7-year-old dog, and she has been racing with me since she was 2 years old. As a 2-year-old, she finished the Cusco and the Kobuk 440, and was a tall order for a 2-year-old dog. She was really special, and has been since. She is a leader, but she's a little cautious and kind of scared of things. And situations like snow machines, for example, or the obstacles in the trail that you come to, she can be a little bit less confident, but she does run and lead incredibly. Right. Brenda just told me you have Lusa's brother, Poker Face. So at any rate, Lusa has been in every race and has never been injured and has never been dropped. So she's an exceptional athlete, and she's incredibly durable. And she's just so happy and sweet all the time and always wants to go. And she fits perfectly on my lap. She's about, 40 pounds. But this year, in the Iditarod, I kept her back in second swing. until we were deep into the race. And it's like, I know I've got her there, and I can put her in lead when I need her to. And I know that when I do put her in lead, she's going to carry the mail for me, you know. And we got to the coast and got into some wind, and, you know, from Unalakleet to Shaq Tulik, and I put her in lead finally for the first time. And I know how much she likes to run in the wind. She just likes to knife into the wind, and she did. We had a pretty strong crosswind coming. Once you get to the bottom of Blueberry Hills and you're head toward Shaq Tulik on that beach, on that strip. And she cut into that wind and just drove like a little maniac, you know, and just kind of about brings tears to your eyes, you know, when you see one of your favorites performing at such a high level for you, and just so happy to do it, you know. So I don't know. That was one of my favorite moments of the race to you know, finally put Lusa up there and lead. Like I said, I'd kind of been saving her for a moment, for a time, and that was it. And it was like everything that, you know, I could have asked for from her during that piece of the run. So, and she continued to run in lead, actually, out of Shaq Tulik, and ran a good portion of the coast. As I said, she loves the wind, so she was in her element there.
Awesome story. Thank you for sharing that. And I had no idea that dog was related to our buddy Poker. If they are true siblings, you know, how they sort of grow up together and have those sort of same traits. I think he's been in lead just about every single time he's ever run with us. So I think there's a little bit to that genetic thing, isn't there?
Yeah, you know, Lusa and Poker Face, their mom's Salt. And Salt's parents were some of Brenda's lead dogs. And in fact, Brenda's main leader when she ran the quest in 1998 would be Salt's grandma. And anyway, basically that line makes a lot of lead dogs. So not surprised at all that Poker Face is driven and likes to run out front.
All right, Will, I have two more questions for you. It's the questions I ask just about every guest that we have on the show. And I know I told you them right before air, so hopefully you had some time to think about these a little bit, sort of big picture questions. And for longtime listeners, you know what's coming. So the first question, Will, is where do you see the sport of mushing in the next 5 years? And that could be Iditarod, it could be sprint mushing, mid-distance, whatever. Where do you see the sport in the next half decade or so?
Well, maybe more people moving north to run dogs. It seems like in the lower 48, you know, there's a pretty good mushing community, but it also seems that they're challenged to have you know, winters that are amenable to dog mushing. So I don't know, maybe we're going to get some more folks moving to Alaska that want to have conditions, you know, that are suitable for maintaining a sled dog kennel throughout the winter. The sport itself, I guess it's kind of hard to say. I mean, one thing that makes the sport more challenging is it's very cost intensive, and, you know, life has, you know, our economy and the cost of living has increased substantially in the last 2 years, and it makes it harder to keep and feed dogs and maintain, you know, your equipment and your vehicle for, you know, your dog truck, everything. You know, life is getting more expensive. So I think it's probably a little more challenging for the average person to maintain a small kennel. As far as the races go, I feel like interest in the sport is still high. And, you know, I feel like a huge part of the success of dog racing is the interest of non-mushers, volunteers, fans, You know, it always blows me away. Any race we go to, whether it's a 100-mile race, 300, or the Iditarod, the amount of enthusiasm and support that, you know, volunteers and veterinarians, folks that are there to support the race, put into it, I feel is paramount. And I don't think we could have a sport if, you know, we didn't have all of the wonderful volunteers and, you know, fans that support what we do. So I feel like that interest, you know, remains high. And as long as that interest is out there, and, you know, there are some hardy folks that can continue to, you know, financially support their operation. I feel like dog mushing should, you know, remain, I think, strong for the next 5 years in the state of Alaska.
For sure. And yeah, like you said, that they were really struggling this winter down there in the lower 48. I think just about every race was canceled for one reason or another, in particular the mid-distance races like the Race to the Sky and the Bear Grease and the UP 200 and all of those. They were just they just didn't have any snow for sure. So yeah, maybe there'll be a little bit more of convoying back and forth to Alaska in the coming years for sure. Will, one last question here, and it is, if a person is just getting started in the sport in one aspect or another, again, it could be distance or sprint or whatever, if you could sit down with them and give them just one piece of advice, just one piece, what would you tell them?
Well, it's all about the dogs, you know, and it's if you want to be successful and you want to be competitive, don't invest your money in a fancy dog truck or in a fancy sled or in all the best clothing. I would say put your prioritize top dogs, you know, acquire lines that are proven, that, you know, that have a pedigree that you can follow back, and acquire top bloodlines and, you know, top dogs. And that's where I think it all starts. It's all about the dogs. And, you know, all of those other pieces, equipment and, you know, et cetera. That doesn't matter if you don't have the dogs, right? So I would say, you know, to somebody starting out, you know, do all you can to, you know, acquire some top genetics, and you'll be successful, most likely, right?
So I guess what you're saying is don't put those fancy rims and tires on a piece of junk that you pick up from the junkyard.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure we've all done that when we were younger. We put the fancy wheels or the big time stereo or whatever in our piece of junk that we got from our parents.
Right.
For sure.
You got to have the dogs.
You got to have the dogs. Okay, Will, you guys are at MackiesDistanceDogs.com. You guys are very active on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, the whole nine yards. We will definitely share that over on your show notes page. Will, it was a pleasure talking with you. I'm glad we were able to sit down and do this. As you said, we've met in passing. And as you were talking, I do recall meeting with you in a hotel parking lot in Fairbanks on a very cold morning where you dropped off a dog or two for us as you were heading into work. So I think that's probably the longest that we've ever sat down and spoke. But I feel good that we did it today.
I enjoyed it, Robert. Yep. I think I'm finally rested up enough to, you know, sound somewhat coherent. So,
hey, you did great. So for sure, guys, definitely check out Will and his wife, Brenda. Really good folks, really good dogs. As I said, I have just about half of my kennel of these heathens right down here in our place. So I will definitely attest to those good dogs is very important for sure. Otherwise, you're just running around with a bunch of has-beens. So we really appreciate that for sure. So, Will, thank you for joining us today. And on behalf of my guests, this is Robert for Mushing. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.